This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Rabbi Brent.
Shalom. Lovely to be with you again, Joan.
Well, Rabbi Brent, you are going to speak today about Emmanuel Levinas. Just why him and what influence has he had on you?
So first, for your listeners, I'm guessing not too many folks out there have heard of Emmanuel Levinas, and if they have, kudos to them for sure. I would say that he is one of the most important philosophers of the 20th century that you've not heard of. He's profoundly influential within a whole circle of philosophers that lived in the last century on issues of ethics and morality. And someone who I discovered earlier in my life while I was in university, and with Levinas came a lens through which one can see our world, through which one in particular can see our relationships with other people and how we interact with them, and what morals and values we should strive to exhibit in those relationships. So I find him profoundly fascinating. And I'm really glad that in our series on philosophers, we've reached the point that I can share a little bit about my true favorite philosopher, Emmanuel Levinas.
And how did you discover him? Is it part of your reading or?
It was in a class that I signed up for. Professor Michael Morgan, who's was on the faculty. He's recently retired from Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana, in the United States. Had been a scholar of Fackenheim. In fact, I should note for our listeners that his brother is actually an emeritus rabbi in Australia, Rabbi Fred Morgan, who was at Temple Beth Israel for some decades. His true interest, his true first love was Fackenheim. Another contemporary of Emmanuel Levinas. And there's this circle of philosophers that emerge in the post-World War II era that force us to reevaluate and reexamine this sort of modern mission of philosophy to make rational sense of our world, and that our world gets better through us increasing our understanding. And what Levinas seeks to impose is that that's not necessarily true when it comes to ethics, unless you bring a priority to make ethics, as Levinas calls it, the first philosophy.
I like the thought of a circle of philosophers.
So they have to have someone to talk to. Most people don't understand them.
So tell us something about him. Who is he? Who was he?
Levinas was born in an area of Lithuania called Kovno. He grew up in a family where his father ran a bookstore, actually. And this was an era when Jews were becoming more and more integrated with the outside world. So that whereas once Jews would be brought up and go to cheder and study Torah and learn Hebrew and eventually Talmud, Mishnah, Midrash, codes, texts about Jewish life. Increasingly, in the period of Levinas' childhood, there was an emphasis on educating young Jews in secular studies, and through his father's work in the bookstore, he became very interested in Russian literature. Speaks about Russian literature with love as one of his first inspirations for philosophy, actually. But this academic spirit that he had led him to be one of the first Jewish students ever admitted into the gymnasia, admitted into the Russian secular schools. And later on, he would follow his passions and his studies to France, where he pursued higher degrees in philosophy.
In French?
in French, yes. And he's thought of as a French philosopher today, although he was born in Lithuania. He left the world of Lithuania behind in a way, and the other aspect of his background that was hugely influential on him was that his family were victims of the Shoah, of the Holocaust. He lost two brothers, Boris and Aminadov. He lost his parents in the Holocaust, numerous relatives. And the Holocaust had a profound impact on him, as it did many Jewish intellectuals of the time. And Jews in general, we should say, I think, yes.
So he remained in France.
He remained in France for the remainder of his life. He founded the Society for French-Speaking Jewish Academics. He was someone who was involved in speaking out for human rights around the world. He traveled to Israel several times and spoke in Israel, actually, as the state came into being during his lifetime.
So he kept abreast with what was happening in the real world, too.
I'd say so. Levinas's two great loves, we've mentioned his philosophy. But also, he was someone who loved studying Talmud. And if I were to place a second hat on him, it would be as a Talmudist. And what he sought to do with the Talmud was in the same way part of his mission with what he sought to do with philosophy. That the term that I mentioned before, ethics as first philosophy, means that philosophy is only worthwhile when our study of it, when engrossing in it, when learning it, in some way informs us of what is appropriate regarding our behavior in the world.
Why did you find that so fascinating?
For me personally, I have to think about how much I want to share.
It obviously resonated with you.
Yes. I mean, I'm a sensitive kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And to know that a subject which I love very much, I'd majored in philosophy, mm-hmm. and studied different areas of philosophy. My undergraduate thesis was actually in an area called speech act theory, which was more in philosophy of language. But also with the Jewish background, Jewish values being so central to my life, working within Jewish communities, I felt within Levinas an ability to adopt a rational basis for our ethics, mm-hmm. and why we should behave the way that we want. And this is something core to Levinas, that he, although he was Jewish, and he was a philosopher, he really feigned at the term being called a Jewish philosopher, for the reason that someone who labeled him as such might presume that what he's saying is only appropriate for Jewish audiences. And contrary to that, he avoided using Jewish theological maxims. He avoided using principles that depended on readings of the Bible. While his ethics seems to correlate with the ethics that can be found in the Bible, for example, love your neighbor as yourself, mm-hmm. and care for the orphan, widow, and stranger that are in your midst, the way that he gets there is through a pure intellectual means, following his area of discipline.
So his message was for all people.
His message was for all people. And certainly the message has been adopted and applied throughout the world for all different areas. Levinas is also able to do something really remarkable within philosophy, which is what makes him a really core figure behind the scenes, influencing people that, you've probably heard their names of, Derrida, Sartre, Camus, people that, all seem to find within Levinas's philosophy a certain framework that gave them ideas to develop and espouse their own philosophies. And, that's because Levinas made his name early on in his career as a translator of Edmund Husserl, Husserl being a German philosopher that really was one of the pioneers creating a whole new area, a whole new discipline of philosophy called phenomenology.
I don't like that sound.
Phenomenology, yes.
Never heard that before.
And Levinas took Husserl's work, which was written in German, and translated it to French, and thereby brought it to the French-speaking philosophical world. He used to quib that his fame was ensured actually by Jean-Paul Sartre, who remarked that he wouldn't have known about Husserl had it not been for Levinas.
Right. So that's fame 2 degrees off.
Something like that. Something like that.
So he spoke German as well.
He did speak German as well, and Yiddish and Hebrew and read Aramaic from the Talmud. So he was
a linguist as well.
He was a linguist. We were speaking about other areas of his life as well. He was employed both as a Hebrew school teacher. He's the principal of a Hebrew school, and he worked for an organization called the Alliance, and the Alliance was responsible for helping Jews who were immigrating to the West to assimilate, not assimilate in terms of losing their religion, but to live within the cultures that they were joining. And in particular, his work focused on helping North African Jews to find their ways into Western communities and learn the ways of life there. A bit of the sort of outreach work that you yourself, I know, do, Joan, so...
Right, and this was he lecturing and getting paid as a lecturer, or was he sort of doing all these odd jobs?
So, Levinas hit certain barriers as he was seeking employment on an academic level. And one of those, actually, in terms of languages, was that he didn't know Latin, and that was used as a way to discriminate against him being able to work in a university setting. Now, that did change later in his life, and he did become part of the faculty of a French university.
So the French university people had to speak Latin?
Yes, yes.
But he must have been published, because you must have read about him. So,
well, he was published, and in 1923, that was when he enrolled at the University of Strasbourg in France. In 1929, he published his first article, which was a review of one of Husserl's articles, Ideas. And in 1930, he completed his doctoral dissertation, which was The Theory of Intuition in Husserl's Phenomenology. He also was a co-translator early in his life of Cartesian Meditations, of course, by Husserl as well.
So that was a big influence on him.
Well, Husserl was a huge influence on him, the reason for that was that Husserl did something unique in philosophy that hadn't been the trend at that point, where philosophy had been focused really since the time of Aristotle on understanding metaphysics, on understanding the reality of the world, the organizational structure of the world that emanates from some first cause, a unifying factor everywhere. Husserl recognized that there was actually Husserl, along with Descartes, who came before, recognized that there was an issue with this study of metaphysics, in that because each of us are trapped within our own minds in a way, we can't experience the world any other way except through our own eyes and ears and touch, through our own senses. Our ability to see that world as it really is limited. And as such, Husserl developed his philosophy not out of metaphysics, but rather building upon some psychological principles that were available. Phenomenology essentially is a study of philosophy that uses consciousness as its origin. And he phrases the way that we interact through the world with acts of consciousness.
As opposed to unconsciousness.
Not really Freudian in that sense. But you know, for example, you see me sitting across the table from you as a phenomenon for being with me. And then Husserl would ask the question, well, what elements does it take to develop that thought that right now we are sitting together?
No.
The problems with philosophy that instigated Levinas to develop his own original philosophy, of which his major first work was called Totality and Infinity, was not so much a problem with Husserl, although it recognized certain critiques of Husserl's philosophy, but revolved more around the lead student of Husserl, his successor, whose name was Martin Heidegger.
And were they lecturers at universities too, or also belonging to a circle of...
In Strasbourg, yes. Martin Heidegger is a controversial figure. There's a book called Heidegger's Children that discusses the circle of thinkers, of intellectuals that were around Heidegger. Hannah Arendt being a love interest at one stage of his, and how they were heartbroken when something happened, which was that Heidegger joined the National Socialist Party, the Nazi Party of Germany. For Levinas, this was a real shock. I mean, someone who he had admired, someone whose work he had also studied, translated, commented on. He was working on a book on Heidegger at the time that he was fighting as part of the French military in World War II. And the shock of Heidegger joining the Nazis caused him to really go through a crisis. He abandoned the book he was writing. He destroyed it, actually. And his philosophy, in a way, started with the premise that Heidegger had gone astray somehow in following this trail of consciousness.
So we blame it on that?
It's more complex. Levinas, in being such a remarkable thinker, was not content with merely objecting and saying that Heidegger was wrong. Rather, he felt that he had to investigate within the particulars of Heidegger's philosophy. to see where the flaw was, to see what it was that allowed Heidegger to affiliate himself with a political party that murdered 6 million Jews, including Levinas's own family. What could possibly justify that as morally permissible for Heidegger, who was no dummy? He was one of the most brilliant people around. And he, even he aligned with the Nazis. It's quite a conundrum. And I think we're going to have to spend a little bit more time to explain exactly what that
point where it unravels is. I can imagine that if they're a group and they respect each other's philosophies and objectives, to have somebody do a turnabout like that negates everything he wrote before.
Sure, sure.
So it's like having a prop knocked out. So how did he recover? Did it make him even more...
Well, Levinas, in one of his early essays, actually several of his early essays, sought to expose these issues in Heidegger. Heidegger's philosophy, I should say, is an innovation upon Husserl's, whereas Husserl called his phenomenology and studied consciousness as the origin of how we relate to and think about the world. Heidegger chooses a different tact and talks about being, awareness of ourselves as being the starting point, so that once we become conscious of our own being in this world, we're able to form relationships with others. And for Heidegger, the I, the ego, ourselves, we are the most important thing in this world, because if we cease to exist, then the world does not exist, right? There's René Descartes' famous statement, cognito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. If you stop thinking, then you're not. And the problem with this is that through the lens of Heidegger, similar to Husserl, every object that's encountered in the world is an act of consciousness. Everything that we encounter, we attempt to rationalize. We attempt to comprehend, to interpret. And so, too, Heidegger followed this vein with other people, so that other people became the objects of consciousness. And other people, then, by Heidegger's system, were only as significant to Heidegger as they were in continuing in ensuring the survival of the ego.
His ego or theirs?
Well, it's the person's ego, because for Heidegger, as being stands in the world, being's own existence, being's hypostasis, being's awareness of itself, is the root of existence. If you, as a person, are no longer conscious of yourself, then you can't be part of the world. And so ultimately survival becomes the key for being, and care and concern are only for how objects encountered help to lengthen your existence in this world.
So everything revolves around you.
It's when Levinas encounters this idea that the light bulb goes on, and he realizes that there's a grave mistake here that's leading us in a dangerous area. And I have pulled before me here this quote that comes from Emmanuel Levinas's essay, Is Ontology Fundamental?
What's ontology?
Is using being. Ontology is the study of philosophy, where being is the basis for which we see the world. Is it fundamental that we view the world in such a way that our being is the most significant thing in the world? And I'm just going to read you what he writes here. Our relation with the other certainly consists in wanting to comprehend him. But this relation overflows comprehension, not only because knowledge of the other requires, outside of all curiosity, also sympathy or love, ways of being distinct from impassible contemplation, but because our relation with the other, he does not affect us in terms of a concept. He is a being and counts as such. So what Levinas will go on to argue is that when I sit down at this table and speak with you, Joan, and we look into each other's eyes and see each other face to face, we're already on a different level when we're not relating to each other conceptually. I'm seeing you as a person. I'm treating you like a person. I'm speaking you already as though you are another distinct world unto yourself, whom I can speculate sees the world in much the same way. And the mere fact that in this moment I engage with you in that way contradicts the thought that the appropriate relationship with other people is conceptualizing them. Rather, they are unique. They are absolute alterity, a big word that Levinas means as other, unable to be comprehended. You being other in yourself, you are worthy of my respect. And that will be the core of Levinas's philosophy.
And you try to comprehend what makes me tick.
No. I can't comprehend. Comprehending is actually violence, according to Levinas.
Really?
I have to stay at a level of relation.
What's the difference?
Oh, now I've got you interested. We're going to have to go on and talk some more. You can see why Levinas is the person that captivated my interest.
So when you study, like studying Levinas, do you have somebody that you argy-bargy with, you know, that you discuss?
You have to at first.
What did he actually mean, and how do you interpret it? Because it uses big words.
Yeah, there's a whole language here, which is a deep language. Any philosophy you're going to find adopts special terms specifically to mean special things, and having the key in your mind to decode those terms requires a lot of exposure to it and also a lot of knowledge of where these terms come from. Levinas is thought of as extremely complex, as you just heard an excerpt from him. At the same time, there's a lot of poetry in his language, and the terms that he adopts and develops as his own language for talking about ethics tend to be things like humility and face and transcendence and hostage, things that are morally charged words and yet have a very specific meaning for him.
Well, Rabbi, you've got me puzzled. And I think we will have to do another program where you perhaps can explain a little more, because these are concepts difficult to take in. But thank you very much, and I look forward to your next dissertation and more of how you dove into this whole area. And thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10, when you can hear Rabbi Brent tell us a little more and explain a little more about his fascination with Levinas. And if you've missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/radioshalom.